The 1st of December is World AIDS Day for 2025. In 2024, there were almost 41 million people around the world living with HIV. That's according to UNAIDS figures. About three quarters of those people were getting antiretroviral therapy. 630,000 people died from HIV-related causes last year, but that is roughly half the number of deaths in 2010. The number of new infections in 2024 is also roughly half the figure of 2010. So what is the state of the fight against HIV in 2025? The International AIDS Society, the IAS, has described it as at the intersection of incredible scientific breakthroughs and a funding crisis that threatens to reverse decades of progress in the fight against HIV. Joining us now on Sunday Extra is the president of the IAS, Dr. Beatrice Greenstein. Dr. Greenstein's predecessor in that position is Australia's Dr. Sharon Lewin. Handing over the baton of the presidency of the AIS, Sharon described Beatrice as a truly extraordinary leader in the response to HIV for the past three decades.
Hi, Julian. Thanks so much for the invitation. I am really happy to be here with you.
It's great to be speaking with you. You're speaking with us from Brazil, your home country, and where you've devoted your career to HIV and AIDS research and care, indeed, founding the largest HIV and AIDS care provider in Rio. I wonder if we could begin by hearing a little bit about the history of HIV and the HIV response in your country.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. So, Brazil has been a champion, a leader in the HIV fight, not only in our region, but globally. So since the very beginning of the epidemic, we have initiated, since antiretroviral therapy has been made available, for instance, when AZT monotherapy was found to be useful to delay progression of HIV disease, Brazil has started to support antiretroviral therapy, and then from AZT, we move it to dual therapy. And then in late 1996, we have initiated a universal access program of combined antiretroviral therapy, at that time called HART. And these have completely shifted the pattern of the epidemic in my country. So back in the 90s, the projections were that the HIV epidemic in Brazil would be huge, but with the external advice from the World Bank was that we should focus solely on primary prevention. And instead, our government decided that this would be a major priority, and we would make available antiretroviral therapy as universal access. What we have seen since then is an improvement in, of course, in quality of life, in survival, but unfortunately, we are still seeing a rise, not only in Brazil, but in the region. We are one of the three regions in the world where new HIV infections are still rising. So despite universal access to antiretroviral therapy, despite pre-HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, it has also been made a public health policy in Brazil in 2017. So we are champions as middle-income countries in implement public health policies. This has all been made possible because we, like you in Australia, we have a universal access system. We have a public health system that makes this all possible. So anyone in Brazil can have, with HIV, can have access to antiretroviral therapy, HIV testing, HIV monitoring, viral load, CD4 count, resistance testing, and to HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis with tenofovir and tricitabine. And anyone who lives in Brazil, even not being a Brazilian, can also have access to the same strategies that are available to any Brazilian person.
Beatrice, despite all those extraordinary efforts, as you said, new HIV infections are still rising in your country and region. Why is that?
It's really because we deal with major issues related to inequities. We are one of the most unequal countries in the planet. So access, despite availability, true access is still an issue for the most vulnerable and most marginalized individuals in our society. The health facilities are not that friendly for this most vulnerable population. So they don't benefit from what is available. So this is all related to poverty, homophobia, transphobia, and racism. These are major issues that affect true access to what is available.
Let's look at the global picture now, Beatrice. As I said, at the AIS conference earlier this year, the situation was described as at a pretty precarious intersection. On the one hand, the prospect of incredible scientific breakthroughs. What are those scientific breakthroughs?
One of the major scientific breakthroughs is injectable HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Yes, that's what's commonly referred to as PrEP. Now, PrEP itself has been a transformative breakthrough in HIV care. I wonder if you could explain for us what the significance of injectable long-acting PrEP is.
So you have certainly heard about cabotegravir, lenacapavir. So lenacapavir was considered the scientific breakthrough of the year by the Science magazine. It's HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis that is delivered twice a year only subcutaneously. Oral PrEP with tenofovir and trizetabine can be used daily or can be used on demand. It's a truly powerful strategy for prevention, but it needs to be taken. So adherence and persistence are major drivers for its efficacy. So you really need to be able to take the pill so that you can have the benefits. So again, the most vulnerable are always those who cannot commit with that persistence and adherence, given HIV is only one of the issues in their lives. So prevention of HIV may not be up in their list of things that are important, despite being vulnerable to HIV. So when you use a drug that is quite potent, such as lenacapavir, and can be used twice a year, you really can overcome major barriers related to adherence and persistence. And in the studies that were done, the registrational studies, Purpose 1 and Purpose 2, both done individuals at risk, substantial vulnerability to HIV, we have seen no infections with lenacapavir in the study done in Africa for adolescent girls and young women. No infections were seen among those using lenacapavir, and very, very few infections were seen in the study done in different regions of the world for MSM and transgender and non-binary individuals as well. So spectacular results of a drug, but now access is imperative. As we have those magnificent results for this drug, we need it to be accessible to those most at risk.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with the president of the International AIDS Society, Dr. Beatrice Greenstein. Beatrice, let's move then to the funding crisis. I wonder if we could start by talking about PEPFAR, which is the American president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, established in 2003 by President George Bush. Could you explain what PEPFAR does and what its current status is?
So PEPFAR has been instrumental to fight HIV and has been able to avoid millions of new infections and deaths. So it has been a huge shift in the course of the HIV epidemic since its establishment. However, since the beginning of this year, when the new administration took office in January in the United States, so all the action related not only to PEPFAR, but to USAID has been modified with the stop orders. So USAID has been totally dismantled and PEPFAR has been strongly modified, and it has now new rules. So for instance, when you talk about prevention, HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis can only be purchased with PEPFAR resources for pregnant women. So all the key populations, the most vulnerable populations, adolescent girls, young women who are not pregnant, MSM, trans people, they are completely out of this program. So HIV testing has been absolutely impacted. The number of people on treatment. So there has been made a major impact on all the aspects from PEPFAR since this stop orders in January.
And that's just one program, obviously. Have the changes in US policy affected the funding of HIV care more broadly as well?
Oh, yes, as I mentioned, USAID, all the actions related to USAID have been stopped. So the impact is huge in HIV prevention, in testing, in the diagnosis of advanced HIV disease, that is also something major. In treatment, there are severe disruptions happening, and also in monitoring of the HIV epidemic. And an important thing is that new infections and deaths among children are also on the rise. And this is something that always happens before everything. Pediatric access to ARVs for treatment living with HIV is absolutely vital for survival, of course. And the pediatric populations are especially vulnerable to service disruptions and must remain a priority in all mitigation and reprioritization efforts. So since then, programs are trying to adapt to the new rules, but major disruptions in all these aspects that I mentioned have occurred. So now, modifications in the entire structure of PEPFAR has been happening. And so, for instance, all the implementing part in this new proposal of international aid from the U.S. Government, the agreements will be done between the United States and the country. So it will be a bilateral contract where the priorities will be clearly stated, and they will mostly be directed to funding of healthcare providers and funding of commodities. These are the major aspects. And also there is an important component in this bilateral contracts that are about pandemic preparedness. So in these bilateral agreements between the U.S. and the recipient country, this pandemic implementation piece is also very important. And it is mandatory that each of these countries that will be signing this contract establish strict, very stringent surveillance for pandemic and inform the United States about any surge that is happening.
In the face of this reversal of US policy and funding, to what extent, Beatrice, have alternative sources of funding been able to make up the shortfall?
Yeah, I think it's important that we also talk about the Global Fund. That is also one of the major sources of international aid. So, and we just saw the meeting in South Africa last Friday when the discussion on the replenishment on the Global Fund was happening. And of course, we saw that a decrease in the resources that were raise it for the Global Fund. So from the $18 billion that were supposed to be raised, the Global Fund was able to raise $11.34 billion. So there was a significant amount from the United States, $4.6 billion, that is less than the 6 billion expected. And countries such as Germany has decreased the funding in 30%. The United Kingdom also decreased the funding by 15%. And France, that is also one of the major donors, will only be able to say how much they will pledge by next month. They were not able to say yet how much money they will put in the Global Fund. However, in this unbelievable, unprecedented times that we are living through, it's still good news that we have 11.35 billion that were got by the Global Fund. It's very important to note that every dollar short of the Global Fund replenishment goals represent lives that could have been saved, new HIV infections that could have been prevented, but now may not be. And it's really this challenging year for global health. Countries that bear the heaviest HIV burden are being forced to make difficult choices. Those choices have just got harder. Who receives life-saving services? Who goes without them? So these are major uncertainties. But we still need to be very happy that the Global Fund got 11.34 billion.
Some nations, including Australia, have been aiming for the effective elimination of HIV and AIDS. Do you think that as a global aim is now unrealistic in the face of the broad trend against funding that you've described today?
I think that it's now we have a really challenging situation globally. I think that Australia has made such amazing progress, achieved substantial declines in new HIV infections, specifically among Australian-born gay and bisexual men, where these reductions of more than 60% have been reported. Still, it's not the same. Even in your country with such a strong health system, you still don't see the same outcomes for instance, overseas-born gay and bisexual men, and also for the Aboriginal people. But still, you have made amazing progress. I unfortunately don't see that the progress globally will go in the same direction where we were before January this year. But we still aim for progress, and we still aim that the best can be done with the resources that we have.
Dr. Beatrice Greenstein, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
It has been such a pleasure and an honor for me. Thank you so much.
And Beatrice is the president of the International AIDS Society. And Radio National's Health Report co-host Norman Swan spoke with Dr. Beatrice Greenstein for the David Cooper Lecture this week, which honors the legacy of the Kirby Institute's founding director. The title of the conversation is Ending AIDS, a Global Responsibility.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.